it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Here we are on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, you heard Elise Glink. We'll talk to her a little bit later. There's a story in Cranes right now at chicagobusiness.com talking to your local less than reputable drug dealer. And the question is, what happens to him after marijuana becomes legal? You know, we're all talking about the infrastructure bill and the taxes going into effect today, the gas tax. I think there's a cigarette tax as well. But 5 months from now, marijuana will be legal. So the question is, what happens to that guy on the corner you've been going to for years? We'll talk to Amy Guth about that. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast that will drop a little bit later this afternoon. We start on Mondays, though, with the folks from Chicago Inno. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are here. Welcome to both of you.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
You look nice and refreshed. A nice weekend, I trust?
Yes.
No, Jim? Not a nice
weekend?
Yes.
Okay, nice weekend. Yeah.
Okay, so I was talking earlier with Bill and Wendy. I think Congress approved, what, $5 million for this Hyperloop that would take us to Cleveland in 28 minutes. I would pick other places, but I guess if you have to go somewhere, like Cleveland in 28 minutes isn't too bad.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it gets you there in half an hour. That's not too bad, right? So, you know, the Hyperloop is this technology that, you know, it feels like we've been talking about for years. You know, it's this big, innovative project that, you know, technologists and civic folks have been kind of hyping up for a long time. But, you know, it hasn't really come to fruition in any meaningful way. And so what happened over at the end of the last month was that they got some initial $5 million in funding to kind of begin the initial sort of stages for establishing a regulatory framework and some environmental and safety standards. So it got approved in House bill. It'll head to the Senate before it goes to the president's desk if it makes it through those steps.
All right, Catherine, is this real? Are we really going to be traveling this way one day?
Well, that's what it looks like, you know, but the thing is that the project still has a lot of hurdles, right? For something like this to come to fruition, you know, the company has to acquire a lot of land to actually build this on, you know, pass certain regulations throughout the different states, and then just, you know, construction hurdles that generally come with projects of this size.
And what's the point of this? Is it to, this is the future, or is this trip to Cleveland sort of an experiment, the beginning of things to come? Why are we doing this?
The point of this is to have a connected system. So it's not just Chicago to Cleveland. It's, you know, Cleveland to Chicago to St. Louis to Kentucky to Florida. I mean, so we're thinking about really connecting these all across the country. And really what it is about bringing kind of, you know, airplane speeds to the ground, right? So moving not just people, but also goods. So imagine being able to, like, ship cargo in 30 minutes and what would normally take hours and hours.
You know, I was thinking of that because it's like, who's going to get in this pod? And it's a pod, right? It's magnetic where you sort of float in this tube.
That's right.
But we fly in airplanes and it looks like it's about the same speed. Now, a little closer to the ground on this one, which could be good in sometimes.
That's right. And so, you know, as Catherine mentioned, you know, a lot of the safety of this has to be proven out. The effectiveness has to be proven out. People are going to have to be willing to be the first to jump inside one of these pods and go 700 miles an hour on the ground, right?
Can we nominate other people?
So there still has to be a lot of hoops to jump through before we get here. But, you know, some initial funding, you know, getting approved in the House is a first step. And so this is the company that's working on it is Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, which is actually one of two companies.
I was going to say, there's one that we could go to Columbus if we don't want to go to Cleveland.
Hyperloop One is working on one that goes from Chicago to Columbus as well.
Is this being done anywhere else in the country?
Yes. So there are other locations. I think the D.C. area has a Hyperloop that's in the works. There are some international locations that have kind of put some initial steps forward. But again, sort of all still in the funding, planning, safety, regulation phase.
So I suppose you could, if you wanted to distribute your population, you could build a Hyperloop train to, say, La Salle, Peru in Western Illinois, right? You could live in the country and then in 15 minutes be at work in downtown Chicago.
Oh, I mean, there are major ramifications for how people work and live in the United States if this system were to come to fruition, right? I mean, if it takes you 30 minutes to get to Cleveland, I mean, it takes me over an hour to get in from the suburbs.
Right.
You know, so
trust me, I know.
Totally rethink the way you set up your housing and where you work and how you're able to commute to your job, right? And so I think it could completely change the way people, you know, plant down roots.
And so look into your crystal ball. Where are we going to be in? Is this a 20-year project, a 50-year project?
So, you know, people who are working on this in Ohio and then the companies themselves kind of put this as at a, you know, a 3 to 5 year timeline. I think it's much closer to a decade plus before anybody's jumping in a Hyperloop. I think these kinds of projects just tend to take a lot longer than what anybody
plans. And even
when
it starts, right, it's going to be, I would imagine, incredibly expensive.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely expect that. Hopefully, it's one of those things where as the tech becomes more mainstream, the price goes down and everybody can use it, right? But at first, I'm sure, yeah, it'll be pretty
expensive. Expect your Amazon Prime packages to be in this before your mom and your dad.
Right, I would think so. So I'm just thinking of my son who goes to school in Southern Ohio. I'm putting him on a Hyperloop to Columbus. He'll be there in 25 minutes, mm-hmm. and he can find his way to Oxford from there.
That's right.
Okay, so while we're in the Midwest, let's go north of Ohio to Michigan. And Jim, you wrote about this company. This is just amazing to me, this StockX company. Now, you're writing about the fact that they've become a unicorn, right?
That's right.
A $1 billion company, and all they are, they resell sneakers.
That's right. So StockX has created this platform for, you know, sneaker resale, but kind of targeting the really hard to find, the real collectible, the really valuable sneakers, you know, sneakers that can sell for over $1,000 on their platform. And so they've created, you know, really an innovative platform to get people to buy and sell sneakers here. And they're actually opening it up to other items as well. But yeah, just last week, they raised $110 million. It was the biggest venture capital round in the history of the state of Michigan. So pretty big deal. And yeah, now they're worth over $1 billion.
How can a sneaker company be a $1 billion company resale?
Well, because I mean, you know, I was just reading about this that you know, resale goods are becoming more popular than ever because of platforms like this, and really kind of driving down the value that you get from buying them directly from the retailer, right? So, you know, people want kind of these rare sneakers or these rare goods, and this is a way for them to get them once the original retailer isn't selling them anymore because they may have been, you know, a limited product.
But, Jim, they've got to sell a lot of used sneakers or not repurposed sneakers.
Yeah,
worth $1 billion.
Yeah, the startup says it's doing more than $100 million a month in gross product sales, which is just unbelievable. And one thing that I like about StockX, too, is that they authenticate everything. So this is a market where you're getting knockoffed everything. So, right, so whether it's handbags or jewelry or shoes, there are people who are trying to knock you off left and right.
Sure.
So what they're doing is able to authenticate everything on the platform. So when you know you're going to StockX, you're purchasing something that's legit.
Catherine, you write a lot about San Francisco companies that find their way here to Chicago. I mean, there's been Salesforce, others as well. But most recently, I guess, Blue Crew is relocating to Chicago. Explain that for me.
That's right. So Blue Crew, they're an on-demand job platform specifically targeting like low-skilled jobs, so think cash register operators or movers. And they were based in San Francisco. And, you know, basically the CEO told me they wanted to relocate to Chicago because it's a lot cheaper to operate here. Also because based on the industry they're in, there's more like low-skilled industrial jobs available in Chicago than in a place like San Francisco where the economy is run by tech jobs.
So which is more important, though, the former or the latter? I mean, it seems to me like there are a number of these companies sort of fleeing San Francisco.
Yeah, there's another one. They're a fintech company called Tegas, and they also announced that they're relocating from San Francisco to Chicago around the same time that Blue Crew did back in March. You know, and then we also see the bigger tech companies like Google, Salesforce, they're expanding here in Chicago because there's tech talent available. And, you know, it's a growing tech hub that they think they can flourish.
Is this help happening in other cities around the country, or is Chicago sort of getting the edge in this?
So I think it's happening in some other places. I mean, you see Austin kind of, you know, coming up in this space where it's a tech hub that's more affordable and there's fewer taxes and it's just kind of more like tech friendly. So Chicago's not alone in that trend.
It's Mex tech friendly. That's what it is in Austin.
That's right.
That's it? None of you laughed, Jim?
You know, what's funny about this, too, is that the narrative around Chicago is that this is why Chicago is poised to be the tech hub, right? Because of the cost of living is so low. And now here are actual examples of companies relocating.
A little bit later in the program, Elise Glink will be here. We're talking about Austin. She's just back from Austin, where there was a big realty conversation about how realty and home sales are looking around the country. And the answer is a lot better than they are here. So we'll talk to Elise about that a little bit later. Also, we'll drop by the corner drug dealer to see how he or she will do after marijuana becomes legal coming up at the start of the year. Right now in the studio are Catherine Davis and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Check them out. Check out the Inno Minute on 720 WGN, the opening bell every morning at about 5:25, right? Jim and Catherine are here. Okay, so Cameo is one of these companies that we keep talking about, and I guess for good reason. It keeps getting a buzz, and they just raised, what is it, Jim, another $50 million?
Yeah, $50 million for Cameo, which is certainly significant. You know, when we covered Cameo to begin with, you know, the idea is kind of silly, right? So their whole premise is connecting you with celebrities who you pay for a celebrity shout out video messages.
Right. So someone will pay $300 to get Ice-T to say happy birthday, Mary Johnson.
And, you know, they didn't start with celebrities kind of the Ice-T caliber. I mean, it was really sort of like the D-list reality slash internet celebrities. So influencers, people on YouTube and Vine and all these other places.
Right.
So it was really able to kind of connect.
People who were easy to get.
But they really opened up this subculture of celebrity to where maybe you or I wouldn't think of this person as a quote-unquote
right.
celebrity, but really connecting fans with people who they are really interested in. And so, you know, what they've been able to do now with a $50 million raise, which is led by Kleiner Perkins, which is a really kind of, you know, venerable, established firm out in Silicon Valley, is proof that these guys have staying power. I mean, this is a real business now, and they've got a lot of runway to go, and they're, you know, proving within the tech world that this is not just kind of a flash in the pan app.
So when I read about these companies raising more money, I wonder what's it for. I mean, Cameo's up and running. It's sort of, you would think, be self-sustaining. I mean, they're signing on. I think they've got, how many celebrities? 17,000?
So, yeah, 15,000
celebrities. So, I mean, you think that they could just make a go of it that way. Why do they need $50 million?
So the big question there is how can they make sure that no one knocks them off in another country?
Okay.
So they are doing a lot of international expansion to make sure that they are the Cameo in the UK, the Cameo in Australia, the Cameo in South America. I mean, they want to make sure that they have a product that is not easily ripped off.
Why do you think, Catherine, that these celebrities, I mean, I can understand if you're a D list or even E or F list, why you'd want to do it to raise some bucks. But Jim's story starts out with the fact that Ice-T is cutting some recordings. Snoop Dogg is there, and Snoop Dogg sort of dives in and then becomes an investor. Ice-T can't need this money, right?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things where as more and more celebrities are doing it, you also want to be on it. You know, and it's also kind of a quick and easy way to make cash, right? You could say that maybe these celebrities don't necessarily need it, but it, you know, sometimes it's in, like, I think Ice-T's case, where he's like now becoming an investor and everything, and it's a good way to get introduced to the company, and you know, you kind of have to participate if you
want to play, right?
Right.
If you're going to pay, 275,000 messages have gone out so far. But here's the thing that's interesting to me, Jim, is they're pursuing this idea of it becoming now more of a conversation between the people on Cameo and the people paying to be part of it.
That's right. So right now, you know, you can kind of, if I wanted to buy you a Snoop Dogg Cameo, you know, I would kind of buy it on the app and he would send it to you wishing you a happy birthday or whatever. So what their kind of next evolution is think about it in terms of, you know, they have a lot of professional golfers on their site, for example. So I could take a video of your golf swing, send it to one of the professional golfers on the Cameo site,
right,
and they could send back critiques, commentary, jokes, what have you, based on the video I sent. So really thinking about different ways to kind of connect. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, some of these artists on the platform 100% are there to make some money. But what it also allows them to do is connect with their fans in a way that they honestly have never been able to do before. And Cameo posts a lot of these reaction videos. So people receiving the Cameo as a gift, they see their favorite, you know, famous person sending them a targeted message, a video about them to them. And it's amazing. Like, they just light up with excitement. And so what you're seeing from the talent side is they're able to connect with their audience in a way that they haven't been able to do before.
And so if you have, say, a celebrity chef answering a question about, you know, why the eggnog is never quite as good as it should be at Christmas or things like that, I mean, that develops, you've got that connection again with your fans, but really brings that whole connection up to another level.
Yeah, connecting, you know, fashion bloggers to people who want their advice on what shoes to wear with a certain outfit, you know. So there's the possibilities are kind of endless in terms of the types of communication between the famous person and the average Joe.
Now, are they up and running on doing this sort of interaction, or they just look for the future?
No, not yet. So what they're seeing, though, is that there is a lot of communication happening kind of with with between the talent and the fans sort of after the initial contact. So, you know, somebody on the talent side will, you know, send, you know, the person who ordered the cameo backstage passes to a concert, right? So Cameo wants to capitalize, like, how can we facilitate those types of reactions within our platform?
It's pretty cool. I mean, it's a, they really have created something out of nothing. I mean, they've, in a way, not that there wasn't a demand there for some sort of interaction, but really capitalized on that. Okay, Catherine, you write about Relativity and the fact that they have hired a new CEO, someone who came from LinkedIn, correct?
That's right. His name is Mike Gamson. He is a LinkedIn veteran, led the LinkedIn Chicago's offices here. And he's also kind of just a high-profile tech guy
he's
around
Chicago. He's an investor
in
a lot of companies, right?
Exactly, yeah. He's an angel investor, invested in a couple Chicago startups, like Cameo, actually. And he is going to be Relativity's next CEO starting July 1st.
And they make legal software?
That's right. So they make legal software that helps companies, you know, kind of get through
all the documents and all that stuff. Okay, so there's that. And would we be following the Winklevoss twins if their name was Smith?
So I can't not think about the Winklevoss twins without thinking about The Social Network, the movie, and just seeing Armie Hammer playing them in that role. But so, yeah, basically, you know, kind of post the Facebook drama for the Winklevoss twins, they kind of went all in on cryptocurrency. They've developed a startup called Gemini, which is basically like a Coinbase app. So it's a platform that lets you buy, sell, hold cryptocurrencies, and they are opening a Chicago office for Gemini.
And so why is it that they're coming to Chicago?
So Coinbase just left Chicago. They did.
Right?
So they had pretty ambitious plans. So they were going to open up a big engineering office in Chicago, plans to hire 100 folks in 3 years, and basically shuttered those operations completely. So the Winklevoss twins, the startup, was able to do is actually hire from some of those people who've been laid off and build a Chicago office for themselves.
And what do they see in Chicago that Coinbase didn't?
Well, they see the talent. So they see, you know, Chicago is still a major financial hub in the U.S., and they still see, you know, access to trading talent. And there's a lot of people who kind of come from that CME family and are able to sort of have that same engineering skill set that's applicable to cryptocurrencies.
Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Jen DeSalvo. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Elise Glink is in the studio. You know her as the primary fill-in for me on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Yay.
Oh, other stuff too. Bestmoneymoves.com and thinklink.com. How's business for you this summer?
It's good. It's hot out there.
Yeah, but business-wise, it's hot out there.
Business-wise, it's hot, too. All good.
Speaking of hot, you were just in Austin?
I was. That was also really hot and a lot more humid even than it is here today. But I was attending and speaking at the National Association of Real Estate Editors annual conference, and we got a mid-year economic report from the leading housing economists, the ones from Zillow, National Association of Realtors, our neighbors right down the street, and the home builders. And so it was really interesting to sit and listen to what they think is going on with housing and why Chicago is a big black mark.
Well, let's get to the black mark in a minute, but is there a national story when it comes to housing?
There is. It has to do mostly with millennials. And so one of the things we've talked about often on your show is the idea that millennials are not buying when they normally would.
Right.
They
might be buying, but it's a delayed purchase.
It is really delayed, like all of the major things, right? It takes them 6 to 7 years on average to get through college. They don't get married till their early 30s. They buy a house at age 34. But it turns out that once they hit 39 and 40, as the oldest millennials are about to do,
they start acting like the rest of us.
They are looking for places to school their children. And so they're now starting to buy single family homes in the suburbs. And that's very interesting.
So they're doing the same things generations before them have done. They're just doing it on a delayed schedule.
Yeah, like 15 years later.
Right. And so what does that mean? Because it disrupts everything, right? The older baby boomers who are trying to sell their homes to the people moving in have had to wait for these people to get excited about the suburbs.
Well, here's the thing, is that older baby boomers aren't really selling. And one of the things we've seen since the Great Recession, when interest rates fell all the way down to, heck, I don't know, we were getting like 30-year loans for under 3%.
Right.
We're not that far off of that right now. But people locked in. And a lot of these baby boomers now have to work all the way until they're close, you know, in their 70s. And so their houses are cheap to live in. They've been paying them down these last 10 years. They haven't been going anywhere.
So they're not leaving because the mortgage rate's so good. They're not leaving because they have to keep working?
Yes and yes. Yeah. And also they keep hoping that their kids are going to have kids, give them grandkids, and move home.
All right. Then it's a different story. We've got this wave of millennials moving in. And the baby boomers not giving. So what does that mean to the housing market?
Well, what's happened nationally, and a little bit different for us, but nationally, home prices have zoomed. And so affordability is nearly at an all-time low for millennials. And they're finding it very difficult to afford almost anything to buy. And that's making it very tough. And so what's happened is they've moved back home in some cases, where, of course, home is a whole lot nicer than that first house you're going to be able to buy. Thank you, HGTV. And they're also looking for other ways to save, and a lot of that is having to do with renting.
Okay, so we'll talk about renting in a minute, but let's get to the black mark now.
So it's interesting. I was talking with Lawrence Yun, who's the chief economist of the National Association of Realtors and somebody I've known for almost 20 years. And he was saying, you know, oh, Chicago, big sigh. We have some structural problems. We have a lot of people leaving the state. We have a pension tax and pension issue where they think there's going to be higher taxes coming on board. I mean, not that that's been telegraphed at all.
Right.
In order to pay for it. Hello, gas tax today. And then we also have this issue of a number of our, you know, in the North Shore, particularly like Forest, Glencoe, Winnetka, and in the western suburbs where you had HQs. Right. Headquarters of big companies, they're moving downtown.
Right,
and so the reasons for the executives to live out there is less and less so that they can cut their commute. And so it's causing a ripple effect.
So I know that the foreclosure problem was particularly acute in some of the south suburbs and south side.
And the north.
So we've got that. But now you're saying that even in the north suburbs, the housing market is drying up there because the jobs have moved back downtown?
Jobs have moved back downtown.
But are these just high-end homes we're talking about there?
Well, you know, it's interesting what the word high-end means anymore. You know, median home prices in San Francisco are $1.3 million. There are a lot of homes in Glencoe at $1.3 million. At the, you know, you would think that was the higher end.
Right.
But you're now seeing homes sell for less than they sold for 20 or 25 years ago.
Wow. And is there a way out of this sort of black mark?
You know, I think the state has really got to confront the pension issue. We have the state's got a big black mark here.
Are people leaving because of the pension issue, because of the taxes? Or, I mean, I understand.
Aren't they tied together?
I don't know. I understand the jobs moving downtown. I get that. But I don't know if people leaving the state because they're worried about the pension crisis.
No, they're worried about taxes. And they're worried about how high their taxes will go to pay for the pension crisis. You know, eventually something's going to have to change. And, you know, Governor Pritzker said he was going to face this head on. He's going to have to face it or push it off to the next governor and the next governor. But you have people with high incomes who are now either living in Wisconsin or Michigan and commuting into the city. That's not good for us. Or you've got people with high incomes who are retiring because it's just that age, moving out of state so that they don't have to pay state taxes.
The people who aren't leaving the state, a lot of them are moving downtown. You talk about the rental income going up, right? There was a story I was looking at about how I think rents in downtown Chicago are more than 55% when it comes to the average in the city. But still, they keep building rental facilities down here.
Yeah, renting has gotten crazy what's happening with rents nationally and also locally. So in the past couple of years, rents are shooting up. And a lot of that average median stuff has to do with the fact that high-end rentals, the we rent, we live, we work sort of place, where you have everything from pool tables to bars that are open all day to cinemas inside and workout facilities. It's basically eat, work, live, play, all in your place. But they charge a very, very high premium for that. And so rents are rising.
So what's the smart, you're the financial advisor or suggester, what's the smart financial play here to rent downtown for a while, or should you still be trying to buy property as early as you can?
I think you got to buy property as early as you can. And I would encourage people who are thinking they might need to move out today. There are some amazing deals in fabulous school districts that people should take advantage of.
That's a good point. So the people who are moving out of the city, well, I mean, Chicago schools are improving, right?
But sure, they are.
They can't touch what you're going to get in a lot of the suburbs.
You know, I think that there's a limited number of fabulous high schools in the city, right in the downtown area. There are a couple of fabulous schools, and kudos to Daly, who had the vision 35 years ago for this. But you got, you know, New Trier is fabulous, and Stevenson is amazing, and out in Naperville, and there's some wonderful schools out by Oak Brook. Those are all suburbs that are worthy of looking at, and prices are really low.
Okay, so 10 years from now, are we still going to be a black mark, or is this a temporary thing?
I would love to see us turn it around. And there is some encouragement, you know, according to The Economist. They think that, you know, as Chicago continues to win tech business, the higher paying jobs, other HQs are looking at moving here, that there's no reason why this state can't turn it around and be fantastic again.
Elise Glink, the brains behind ThinkLink.com and BestBunnyMoves.com as well. Thanks for coming by. Nice to see you.
It's nice to see you. Be in the same place for a change.
I like it. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. State of Illinois is not the best when it comes to sorting through finances, and though we try to shed that skin and really truly get better, it's tough. Federal audit of the state was recently released, showing that Illinois owes the government $4.1 million. Because we just happened to forget a handful of drug companies owed the state. There are a few different programs under Medicaid that provides a financial perk to the state, but Illinois didn't quite do it right. Now we've got a big fat bill. But something we are doing right is happening here on the river, our architecture cruises. Have you been lately? Well, it was voted the second best attraction in the world. The world! Not the Midwest, not the U.S., the world. And number one on the list was a visit to the Vatican to see the Sistine Chapel. Well, that's just the coolest thing I've heard all summer. It was ranked among 200,000 experiences on TripAdvisor. Our tourism was already on the rise, but I'm sure this will only help.
No, siamo migliori di Chicago.
Sorry, Italy. We're coming for you. I'm Bennett Wake Knight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Well, thank you, Orion Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, I've been telling you the last few months, I guess several weeks, about The Daily Gist, the podcast hosted by Amy Guth from Crane Chicago Business, and she joins us on most days to talk about what's grinding in The Daily Gist. Amy, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Has it been years, months? How long ago now?
It started the first week of March.
Really? Okay, yeah. So just a couple of months.
Yeah.
So people are talking today about the governor and the tax increases, and it's all about the infrastructure bill. But on January 1st, we're going to be able to buy marijuana legally for recreational purposes.
That's right. And today I talked with Crane's Chicago Business reporter, Claire Bushy, and I cannot wait for everyone to listen to this conversation. We had such a fun time talking about this because it's not very often that you get to check things off your journalism bucket list.
Right.
One of them is screaming, stop the presses. One of them is, you know, breaking news, this, you know, very dramatic thing. But two that she got to do, she got to swear in print, and because she was quoting this, she interviewed a drug dealer.
That's what the guy said.
That's the other one. And that's what he said. So we talked about that today. This guy he makes $200,000 a year selling marijuana right now, and that's tax-free. His point is, I did so without marketing. And the conversation was, let's look ahead. What's the future of your business? Is it in peril once things are legal in Illinois?
So is this guy worried about that?
He's not, because his point is, my quality will be better. Mine will not have that big markup for taxes.
Right.
And I have some loyal customers. And she even likened it in the podcast, which I thought was such an interesting way to look at it, but so accurate. Just because you can buy a book for less on Amazon
doesn't mean you will.
You don't want to support your local bookstore.
Yeah, but it's a little more than just a book, because there's a criminal penalty involved.
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah. Which she mentioned several times, that there are, you know, when we talk about a drug dealer, we usually talk about the legal part first, not the business part, not the economic point
right.
of view for that person. But this guy doesn't seem worried about it. And he also brought up an interesting point that we've already started seeing this in California, that a lot of people in this industry know each other and have for a long time. Just because some of them suddenly go to the legal side of it doesn't mean they stopped knowing the people they knew before. And suddenly it's okay to call the cops on your competition to eliminate them, which we've seen a lot in California.
So, it's like taking the sports book, right? I mean,
yes.
Just because you can go now to a casino and bet on a game doesn't mean you're not going to go to your mom and pop bar and bet on the game.
That's right. Doesn't mean that suddenly if you had a bookie all this time, you wouldn't keep going to your bookie.
Right.
Yeah, it's like that. It's very, very interesting.
I love Claire's description of his business, right? Because he keeps spreadsheets and everything.
Oh, this guy's super organized. And the way he's talking about his business, you wouldn't necessarily think he's talking about an illegal operation. He's very on top of it. He made the point, you know, like I said, that he's like, look, I made $200,000 a year without marketing. This is a business you can't market. You just have to be good at what you do.
And he's got another job, right?
Yeah. I mean, this guy, he's a really interesting character. Of course, I asked her in the podcast, how in the world did you get this person's trust to speak on the record?
Right.
You know, I mean, she sat in a Dunkin' Donuts for 2 hours talking to a pot dealer. It's not something you get to do very often in an interview.
I wonder how many of his clients end up at a Dunkin' Donuts.
Who knows? Maybe we just blew his cover.
Well, so he can't market.
Correct.
So it's got to be word of mouth, essentially, right?
Sure, you have to build trust with your clients, I suppose.
So that means that's the point. He's got people who come to him, know how to find him, and he'll even deliver, right? Does he make deliveries?
I mean, you know, if someone could invent, like, Grubhub for your drug dealers, they would...
I wonder if that'll happen.
I'm sure someone will think of that.
And I want to ask you about another story in Cranes right now that Danny Ecker wrote, and this has to do with that sprawling complex out at Hoffman Estates where AT&T used to be headquartered. I was in Northbrook Court Saturday, and I walked in, and I kind of knew this was happening, but I was jarring when I walked in, and the Macy's store is now liquidating.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, I've been coming to this store for 25 years, and now all of a sudden it's, you know, selling its racks of clothes. It's racked, literal clothes racks. And so we're seeing a lot of that. But what's happening is they're going to build apartments there. They're going to try to make it this sort of mega complex where you can live and do everything you want to do.
A metroburb is the word being thrown around.
The Glen from the Naval Air Station.
Yep.
And so now in Hoffman Estates, they're going to try to create a metroburb.
Yes. So the Glen is actually a perfect example where it's like a little contained community that feels a bit urban.
It's the rage right now.
It's the thing that's happening. And so that's what this New Jersey-based developer believes that he can do with this spot that used to be AT&T. I mean, I think you have to have a lot of creativity and boldness as a real estate developer to go in and see and kind of see that vision and how that could play out. You know, I wondered about prior to Paul Mitchell buying it, you know, if maybe that's what the future of the former McDonald's headquarters might be once I saw the Glen. But yeah, I think this is a thing that's starting to pop up in a lot of places. And I'm not sure I'm sold on Metroburb yet, but
well, it's kind of funny because it used to be you would go and park your car and then you could walk around the mall.
Yeah.
Now, even though we live in Chicago, we're now parking our car in these metroburbs, if you will, and walking around outside. I just don't quite get how we've made this sort of transformation.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, is it in response to so many people wanting to live in a more urban environment, more people living downtown? I don't know.
Yeah, but they still are driving
They're
there.
They're still
you know?
Driving there, I mean, right. It's like, I want the suburb life, but I want to be able to be, without getting on a metro, I want to be able to have like a small contained urban thing.
I want city amenities.
I need some grit,
and I need to
but
park,
only a little bit.
And I need to park right in front.
Right. Right.
Amy Guth, we'll check out the Daily Gist dropping in about an hour or so, right?
That's right.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.